My Rock. My Rock, Danmarks eneste rockradio. Fang os på FM, DAB, RadioPlay.dk og nu også som podcast. Velkommen til My Rock Podcast.
Det er endnu en gang blevet onsdag, og dermed tid til en ny omgang af My Rock Podcast. Mit navn er Sten Skovgaard, tusind tak fordi du lytter med. For et par måneder siden fløj jeg en tur til Stockholm for at interviewe guitarikonet Michael Schenker, dagen før han udgav sit andet album Revelation med bandet Michael Schenker Fest. Det var sådan set meningen, at interviewet skulle centrere sig om albumet, om hans ikoniske Flying V-guitar og hans indflydelse på nogle af de største guitarister i verden, som hylder ham som en guitargud. Det er også emner, vi kommer kort ind på, men som du også kommer til at høre meget hurtigt i dagens podcast, så tager samtalen en helt anden drejning. Noget, som er knap så festligt, men alligevel utrolig fascinerende og ja, i virkeligheden ret trist. Michael Schenker begynder nemlig åbenhjertigt og uden forbehold at tale om hans mildest talt meget anstrengte forhold til sin bror Rudolph, som han kalder for en svindler og en kunstig udgave af sig selv. Det er en fortælling om at blive udnyttet, plagieret, ydmyget og at blive skrevet ud af Scorpions historien for egen vindings skyld. Uden at afsløre for meget allerede nu, så synes jeg, at du skal høre ham selv fortælle historien. Først så skal vi dog lytte til noget af det, det hele handler om, nemlig musikken. Her er et nummer fra den nyeste plade, Revelations.
So I'm here with, I wouldn't say legend, I would say guitar icon, Michael Schenker. Thank you for taking your time to talk to MyRock.
Oh, thank you for talking to me.
How are you doing?
Good.
You have a new album coming out. Right now, it's September 19th. The album comes out tomorrow.
Yeah.
How are you feeling?
Good.
The album is called Revelation. It's the second album from Michael Schenker Fest.
Yeah.
Tell me, Michael Schenker Fest is, for a large part of the members, kind of the same as the Michael Schenker Group.
Yeah.
So why did you have to change the name?
Yeah, because it's a third part of my life. It's celebration time. It's a fest. And when we did the first, when we did the DVD that I decided to film in Tokyo, which I'm glad I did, which was giving the people for the first time a proper idea of the potential of this undertaking, because before it was just all on iPhone and YouTube and so on. So that's when the record deals were coming in, and and I said simultaneously, next thing, Michael Schenker Fest in the studio. So I wanted to have for me, it's the third part of my life. It's celebration time. So that's why Fest is linked in, and everybody else together, we're just having a party. But the first Resurrection album, I wanted to Michael Schenker Fest in the studio. That was the album title, and the cover was supposed to be all feast and bosom, Hofbräuhaus woman with big bosom, lager, beer and alcohol. I mean, just a big party, mm-hmm. and with the control room in the background. And then I got sent, and I said, send me a table with everything on it so we can put the people in the right places and stuff like this. And what I received was the Last Supper. And so I was kind of confused. I think the NB Nuclear Blast art department already had an idea. And so I think various members in the band and co-producer Michael Foss, I think they all started to see bits and pieces. And so Dookie started writing, take me to the church, and Michael Foss, the Last Supper. And I thought, if we're going that direction, I might as well call the album Resurrection and the Instrumental Salvation, And that was that part. With the second album, it was like I had three ideas from Nuclear Blast, and I had a scribble from the Scorpions. When the Scorpions approached me in 2015 to help them with the release of the Scorpion set box. And when I read the Love Drive story, it was complete false, and I was very disappointed, And I said, I'm not going to do anything for you guys. This is bad. It opened a can of worms. You also have to remember I had Herman and Francis in my band from the Scorpions, so for 4 years. I am now discovering so many things. It's unbelievable, because I was always celebrating my brother Rudolf, over 30, 40 years. More power to Rudolf, because when I broke free from the Scorpions with Love Drive, because Rudolf wanted me to keep me in the band, because I wrote a hit. I was first time in America when I was 19 or 18 years old. The Scorpions, 33 years old by the time they came to America, and I'm 6.5 years younger, So I have a whole history before. People have forgotten about. People don't even know, And because I said to the Scorpions, I help you with Love Drive. If you're stuck in the pit, I need a 6-member contract for Love Drive. That means a picture, which they left out, which is breach of contract right there. Then they left out writing credits, no Michael Schenker as composer. Then they left on Holiday and Coast to Coast, the intro of Holiday, 45 seconds introduction. Then Rudolf asked me if he can use the Black and White Flying V. So what he was trying to do, knowing that I'm not going to join the Scorpions, he was trying to figure out how to distort, how to confuse people. So he thought, Schenker, no picture of Michael, black and white V, later blonde hair, nobody missing. So, you know, and I was very disappointed. And then, of course, because they got rid of Matthias twice, Rudolf had to make up a story, you know, saying like, oh, I couldn't say no to my brother Rudolf. Michael, you know, is my brother Matthias. What else can I do to justify him being sacked, you know? But the truth is, Rudolf cried on the telephone and asked and begging me to stay with the Scorpions. I said, I can't. I have to carry on with my own vision. I just left UFO because I want to, you know, and the main thing was, I was, you know, I started off like a kid in a sandbox, you know, having fun playing. I didn't expect anything. I didn't look for anything, didn't compete with anybody. I didn't look for fame. I didn't look for success. Nothing, just recreational. And I played. And one day, at around the time of Strangers in the Night, people were saying Michael Schenker is God. I said, what? You know. And then in '81, Rudolf calls me and said, like, Michael from America, they're all playing your guitar style over here. I said, what? What the? You know, I had no clue what I had created. Oh, then unconsciously, completely, no idea. And then so I was granted that I was actually. I was glad that I was granted so early in life to have a peek and experience a bit of the lane of fame to make a decision if I want to stay there, you know, in the commercial money-making gobble machine, or if I wanted to be an artist, just do the second part of my life, you know. Ozzy Osbourne, he wouldn't have made a penny with me if I would have joined him in my middle years, because it was all about experimenting, learning about myself, learning about life, becoming a three-dimensional Michael Schenker. Instead of being body, mind, and money, I wanted to be body, mind, and soul, you know. That's the three dimensions. So most people think body, mind, and money. But anyway, based on, you know, I have got, the first song I wrote was In Search of Peace of Mind, which I wrote all by myself in my mother's kitchen. There was nobody there. And the Scorpions credited themselves for that song, you know. And so I got already, as a 6.5 year younger brother, they already 6.5 year older, Klaus and Rudolf, I got already taken advantage of, you know, as a 15 year old. And so it's quite a big gap when you're 15, 21. And I have a tattoo that said Born to Overcome and Born to Be Free. So if you put the three together, you understand why I chose the middle years the way I did. Plus, I was overflowing with ideas of you know, I did acoustic instrumentals, electric instrumentals, you know, I did like albums that never stopped from one riff to another. You could have made 5 albums out of one album, you know, and stuff like that. And everything was coming from within, nothing coming from a trend. If anything, I created in the 70s because I understood since I was 17 not to listen to any more guitarists, not to copy anybody. If they're already doing that, why should I do the same thing, you know? So I understood that this brain is like a sponge. Whatever you listen to, you automatically copy. So I have to protect myself so I don't listen to music in a radio, in a car or at home or anywhere since I was 17, which is almost a half a century now. And so as a byproduct, I developed an original style, which was so attractive for the people like Metallica and Iron Maiden and all the guitarists, like Judas Priest especially, etc. Slash, they said they had never heard anything like that. And so I understood when I was 17 that if we are all unique, that means what is inside me, nobody knows until I open up and let it out, you know? So if I keep doing that, I keep putting out fresh colors, new things over and over. And that's what I did instead of versus, it was my trend anyway, that I created in the 70s for the 80s. So I carried on playing Michael Schenker music and regardless of what the trend was. And so I had many different lineups, and so when the realization came in, like, yeah, I've been playing the most popular music for so many years, without the original singer. I want to do it with the original singer, you know, for the hardcore fan, for me. That would be great, you know. And the original composition, you sung with the original people. I didn't perform for 30 years, no Mykola Shenka stuff and no Assault Attack stuff, except for Assault Attack song, you know. But it was peculiar, that as if that was put on ice, on hold for now, you know. And so basically, what actually bugged me about the thing with the Scorpions was that they tricked the people, fooled them, and this, the new generation like Russia and China, the re-releases have no name, no picture on it, so it looks like the Scorpions did it all for themselves. What really bugs me and makes me curious, what is wrong with them? Why can't they even say thank you? Why can't they even see that bridging that gap from Europe to America was their step? Can you imagine that was, I would have not joined the Scorpions. What would have happened to the Scorpions? Can you imagine I would have not have found them Uli John Roth to replace me? Can you imagine what would have happened to the Scorpions? No Tokyo Tapes. What would have happened to the Scorpions if I wouldn't have joined UFO? Taking them with me on the international scale, step by step by step, like Metallica did with Megadeth, you know? What would have happened to the Scorpions if I had not left UFO? There would have been no Love Drive. There would have been no connection. There would have been no Love Drive. There would have been no Turkey Tapes. There would be nothing. So now, why not looking at that? What's wrong with you guys? Why losing, you know,
losing
the touch stuff. With the yeah. reality, with yeah. the ground where everything comes from, you know? And so why looking so desperately for something you can't have, and before, because you can't have it, nobody will, and you slander it, trash it, and humiliate. You know, I was invited on stage in front of thousands of people with two more very famous people. I was given a guitar with loose strings out of tune, just to make a fool out of me. That's how they envied me, and the business world was very angry with me too, because I was a potential for lots of money. But instead, you know, I was just being ripped off. Money was stolen from me. People were angry. They humiliated me. They tortured me. So I'm hanging on the V. My image was distorted by Rudolf using the V and confusing the people, you know. So everything. But I didn't notice much, because I was happy to be away from the Scorpions and start my own life and work on what really matters to me, you know. And but only when they approached me 2015 with the Love Drive, with the Scorpions box set, did they open a can of worms when I read the false story. And that was it, you know. That's when I started to realize what actually happened behind my back while I was in my orbit, far away from Earth. But I'm coming back and seeing the disaster. So anyway, that is the thing. And then also, I jump-started the Scorpions with Lonesome Grove, and I jump-started the Scorpions with Love Drive. I jump-started UFO with Phenomenon, and I jump-started UFO with Walk on Water. 2002, Phil Mock asked me for the name back. I owed 50%, you know, and he said, you need to work, you need to earn money, etc. I said, Phil, you can have the name back for free. No thank you either. So what's wrong with these people? What is bloody wrong with them, you know? And so basically, I'm very concerned about these people, that they are so obsessed, you know. And that's the album cover. It's like Caesar was a very greedy person, very corrupted, and he even envied a man that people were listening to, and he had to kill him, you know. That's how crazy. It doesn't lead anywhere, you know. The one who conquers himself conquers more than the one who conquers the world. Caesar, many people have tried to conquer the world. It does not work. It doesn't go anywhere. It never works, never ever. And so basically, I'm just, you know, hoping that, you know, if life is for development and for having realizations, learning things and establishing more wisdom and understanding on how everything works, our relationship with our creator, et cetera, that something will wake up and they will understand, like, wait a minute, we lost it. We lost it. We forgot how we got there. Because if you take those pieces out, there would be no future for them, you know. So that is the confusing part on that level. But you know, in 2008, something said in me, I want to be on stage. I went, what? I want to be on stage? I'm stage fright. No, Michael, you're not anymore. I was so happy. You know, I was looking forward to be on stage in 2008 in the speed of light, you know. I went back all the way up, you know. I did In the Midst of Beauty with Gary. I did Michael Foss, Michael Schenker, Temple of Rock. I did the Spirit. I did the Bridge the Gap with Herman and Francis and Doogie and Wayne. We did the Spirit on a Mission. We did, then I did the DVD, live CD. And we have been together with Michael Schenker Fest for 4 years now. And then, because it's the third part of my life, that indicates that 2008, my stage fright was gone. It meant, like, for me, okay, now is celebration time. So put this together, gathered all my band, all the energy that I had spread it all over the place, you know, in those 10 years. I got all together in one center and make one big group. And such a unusual situation for people to come to see the show and see it all flash by in one show, you know, all four of them, and including Doogie, who was the current, you know, so we have concurrent and past, and now because we make a studio album together, we have current and past and current all together mixed up. And so now we have the second album, Revelation. And I'm hanging on the Flying V, getting tortured. But the musicians, you know, something is in the making, and we win against the greedy people and the corruption, and we are celebrating Michael Schenker Fest. You know,
it all makes sense now. But the thing I was wondering is, when you pick members for your band, it seems that you pick people you already know. But is it more important for them to work in a social kind of way than in a musical kind of way?
Then in a what?
In a musical kind of way. Is it most important that they're good at playing their instrument, or that they're actually good people?
Well, the thing is, with the Michael Schenker Fest, we called up the 80 singers. They were waiting. They were waiting on the phone. Yes! And when the musicians, the same thing. So they all wanted to do it. Mm. So it goes without saying, there you have no resistance. You have happy people wanting to do it. And they would have never thought something like that could happen that late in life, you know. Mm. But Steve Mann said in an interview, this could have gone so wrong. I never even thought of going wrong. I just say to myself, asking doesn't cost, you know. I have an idea, I ask if possible. If it's not possible, I think of something else, you know. But it was possible, it was meant to be. If something is that flows like that in such a way, you know, where four singers don't even fight each other and have a problem with each other, you know, there's more than meets the eye behind it, you know.
I want to know, because when I look at what you've done and how you influenced music, it pays off, because a lot of bands look back and say, well, Michael Schenker done this, he played like this, we have to do the same way. One of the ways I discovered UFO was at an Iron Maiden concert. The first thing before they enter the stage is that they play Doctor Doctor. And I was like, whoa, that's an honor. How do you feel about being such an influence to other musicians?
Yeah, you know, like I said in the beginning, I never expected anything. You know, everything is the icing on the cake, and I welcome that. It's fantastic. If you don't expect anything and you get something, it is the greatest feeling. If you expect something and you get it, it's maybe okay. You know, if you expect something and you don't get it, you're disappointed. You know, so in my case, me getting awards, you must be joking, you know? It's icing on the cake. It's just unbelievable.
But right now, it's all about being a good human, playing some good music, and getting over stuff, I suppose.
Just being myself, you know. I mean, not being a good person. I'm focused on being a good person. I'm just being myself. Mm. And I am who I am today, if I like it or not, you know. And I am what I am, who I am today. Tomorrow, I'd be the next Michael. And the point is, the middle years, I did my work, school of life, into the arena, battleground, hurdles, going through crises, old teachers, not bad things. They develop me. They make me, if they don't kill you, makes you stronger. Then you own that wisdom. Then you get realizations. Then you get to the next level of understanding, more about yourself, more about life, etc., etc., etc. So that's how it works. So that's what the middle years were for.
Let's talk about your guitar, because we talked about the black and white Flying V already. But how come that you actually chose to pick up the Flying V? How come that you love that guitar, that model so much?
You know, I never picked the V. Rudolf went window shopping. He picked the V. He is a wannabe and he's a guitar collector. He can't play guitar. Usually the people who can't play guitar collect guitars, okay? I only had two guitars, one spare guitar in case I break a string. So I had a Les Paul, and at some point it got locked up, and I had to use Rudolf's guitar, you know, and when I plugged it into my Marshall, there was a sound that spoke to me in a positive way, you know, and so I went like, wow, I like this combination, you know. It happened a couple of times, so the Flying V came to me. But the funny thing also is, I was 13 years old, and we did, in school, we had practical hours, you know, where we were building something. I was building a guitar. What did I build? A triangle guitar, you know, and that's already at 13, so it's predestined anyway. And the main thing is, I didn't go window shopping. The guitar came to me, and the guitar came to me, and everything I did with it, all my positioning, how I hold the guitar and stuff like this, is far off from posing. It is all based on circumstances. Yeah. The moment I had that guitar, I liked the sound with the amplifier, and I had to stand up with it. If you look at Rudolf, who can't play guitar, and you can see how he holds it, because he's just strumming away. He's probably thinking how he can make some money. And he looks like a schoolboy playing it, you know. Mm-hmm. But because I was already developing, I put the guitar standing up between my legs, realizing I can create a heavy vibrato. So all of a sudden you have this position with the long hair and like this, with something that nobody has ever seen before, including myself. Mm-hmm. When I saw myself on the picture, I never saw. Michael, you look like you're having a shit, you know? Well, I don't know, but this is how I can do this. My partner, listen to this. I showed it to Kirk. He said, like, wow, is that how it happened, you know? Wow. And so when I, you know, also when I, you know, on stage, I'm always looking for a sweet spot, you know, and that's why I behave the way I do. So it all has a reason, a musical reason. That is the difference, you know. And when we did the Strangers in the Night album, and we had our mouth open, copying the audience like that, mm-hmm. Rudolf took that and used it live, you know, and he made it his trademark. So he used everything I did. He copied everything. He copied Lights Out with Love Drive, which became a galop, etc., etc. And because I played that song too. And, you know, so basically Rudolf knew that I was the path, you know, I was paving the success for him, you know. And that's why it's so important that Love Drive happened that way, and that I left. You know, I had to live. Rudolf could have done all of this without cheating, without humiliating me, without bullying me. 6.5 years older, come on. You know, you don't fight with a boy, you know, like that. You know, you should know better. He could have had that, but he was too desperate for fame. So he thought he would lose it if he wouldn't cheat, you know. And so, but, you know, I'm not bitter about it. I'm just very confused that was how blind and stupid you can become, you know, when you're so desperate on wanting something. And of course, Rudolph always wanted to be Elvis Presley and somebody famous like that. And I never asked for it, and I got it without, you know. And 6.5 years younger, of course, he was frustrated, you know. But you know, everything worked out that way. I was celebrating Rudolph all these years, you know. I was so happy. I could never understand how someone with so little can achieve so much, you know. It was fantastic, you know. And I was in my own world. And the beautiful thing is, I never had to envy any of it, because I made all my decisions based on understanding what I want next, etc., etc. So there was the room, the path for Rudolph was free. But the problem was, I didn't know what was going on behind my back. There was all this shit, because what they thought, because they're two-dimensional in their head, they thought that I left because I wanted it all for myself. And Rudolph came to my wedding in 86 and made the wedding speech and called me in front of all the relatives and everybody a very selfish person. How? That on top? You must be bloody joking. Who the hell are you? Why are you so desperate breaking me into pieces in front of people, humiliating me? Why? For everything I have done.
I'm in shock.
Crazy.
I'm honestly in shock.
Yeah.
Because that's not how you treat your brother. That's not how you treat family.
No, I'm in shock today because I can't believe that I you know, all that went on all these years, you know. And I didn't even notice when Rudolph was saying that in front of my relatives. I only realizing now at this age, looking back, what I actually, I never really even analyzed what I did for the Scorpion. I never even analyzed Love Drive. It's going back now because I'm realizing, looking back, their behavior and what I have done for them. And I even got them Uli. And I realized all these different things that they must have forgotten about and created a Munchausen disease. And they probably believed they all did it by themselves. And China and Russia and all the new part of the world, the newcomers, you know, I'm not even mentioned on anything. So they want to take credit for everything good and powerful and want to cut out the ones that should not be part of it, but did it. You know, I did Love Drive. I played in the end over the whole album to put sparkles and sprinkles over it. Then when they did Blackout, they copied Love Drive because that was the same album Matthias wasn't capable of doing. So what he had to copy that because he had no idea what else to do. So the only thing they could do was do something similar to this because Love Drive was a success. And Michael helped. So Michael put a stamp of what to do. And so Matthias was able to study what Michael did and injected that and adapted that. So Rudolph and Matthias and everybody adapted everything that I created with UFO, including the...
including the face.
Yeah.
And one thing you also did, and that's one of the things that I wonder, how the hell did you come up with that, is your wah pedal. The way you use that, like yeah, putting it in a sweet spot and just leave it there.
Was amazing, you know, absolutely amazing, because I'm not a technician and I'm not a technical guy. And I was really attracted. Well, first, I think John Nick Ronson was the first one I really saw the wah-wah pedal being played. And I went like, wow, I like that. And because it was the crybaby with the old components and Les Paul and the Marshall and so on, there was something in there. I knew that. There was something in there. I just couldn't really quite understand what it was unless I had to get one myself. The first time I plugged it in, I plugged it in the wrong way. It went, woo, woo, woo. You know, it was like a fire siren.
Yeah, yeah.
And then I plugged it in the right way and very quickly, because I just know what I want. Period. That is the secret, you know. I hear the sound that what I want to create. I played the wah-wah pedal, I realized that somewhere there were uglier sounds, you know, and there was somewhere there was a really beautiful sound that was I was attracted to. I thought, let's have a look inside the wah-wah pedal, how that thing works, you know. And it was simple, it was just a wheel like a clockwork thing with one with teeth in it, teeth over there, and so you go up and down, and the wheel changes the EQ. So I said to myself, okay, if I can find that spot of that sound that I want in down position, so adjusting the wheel, then I can, on the spot, get that sound. And that's how I did it, you know. And so I did that for a while until the wah-wah pedal starting to get old, breaking down, components were replaced with other components. They didn't work so good anymore. Then in 83, 84, I lost my amplifier. I used all these years, I brought it to in Oakland to a music store. And they took all the pieces out. The new, there was my amplifier, and that was gone. And so I looked for a new amplifier, and I spent ages, you know, to find. And then I found one in the 2205. And then a guy in New York told me, Michael, did you know that you designed that amplifier? I said, what? Because I went like, I can't believe it. Mm-hmm. I was in the Marshall factory early 80s designing my own amplifier, Marshall. Wow. But we never completed the diagram, but it was still lying around somewhere because I think we never got a deal or anything. I was with Peter Mensch at the time. I think we never agreed on a deal or something, so we kind of just left everything and forget about it, you know? And so somehow, all these years later, somebody must have found the diagram, you know, and that guy, you know, he knew, and there was somebody else who actually was in the factory when I was there. I can't remember what his name is now. I bumped into this friend of Mr. Big, bass player, Billy Sheehan. So anyway, I was amazed, you know. And so I realized that, if that is my amplifier, explains why I all of a sudden don't need so much wah-wah pedal anymore, because that frequency is already in there, you know. It's kind of really strange developments.
That's sweet mid-range. Huh? That's sweet mid-range.
Yeah, that's sweet mid-range.
Michael, our time is running out. I got one last thing to ask you, because I saw the list of names who wanted to add you to the band. Rolling Stones.
Who?
Rolling Stones.
Oh,
Aerosmith, Ozzy, Phil Lynott, Motorhead,
David Coverdale, Deep Purple.
I was going to ask you, did I miss any? who else?
A lot of them.
Yeah. But how come that, how did you manage to stay true to yourself and say, well, I want to go this way?
Well, it's funny because Graham Bonnet had just joined the band. We did Assault Attack. We were ready to rehearse, or we were already rehearsing. Cozy Powell was still in the band. I was approached by David Coverdale at the same time to join Whitesnake. Peter Mensch wanted me to have Coverdale. I said, like, why don't you have Coverdale join MSG? And, you know, the whole point of me getting Gary Barden, an unknown singer, to get out of the spotlight by joining Peter Mensch, she put me straight back into that by getting me back with with more difficult people to deal with, you know, like big singers already, big name singers, and so. But I ended up with Graham Bonnet, and Peter Mensch didn't like the idea, and we separated, you know. But it was not my idea to change singers in the first place. I was all happy with Gary because I wasn't looking for anything. I even refused to record with Matt Lenger. I said to Peter Mensch, I don't want to sound like AC/DC, and that was it, you know. But at the end of the day, it was like this, you know. I was tempted to do it, you know, and temptation, you know, can be a very strong thing, you know, to get you off the track, you know. I wanted to stay true to myself. And by the way, there's a saying, if you stay true to yourself, everything else will be added onto you and more, you know, and that's exactly what's happening today to me, because I didn't sell out. And but I said to myself, actually to my partner at the time, that wasn't Amy, I said, like, you know, if I ask for the impossible, he's going to let me off the hook. I don't have to do much, you know. And it's funny, I had an interview with somebody else who mentioned the jet, a private jet. He said, I did say that, right? I couldn't remember because such a long time ago, but I think I mentioned something. I want my private jet. I want this. I want that. I want that. So in other words, I must have thought in the back of mind, if he would give me all of that, maybe, who knows, maybe it could work, you know, but the universe protected me, and Ozzy, of course, he went like, you must be bloody joking, you know. He didn't talk to me, but he apparently wrote a book about it, and said that, I said that, and I love Ozzy, you know. Ozzy yeah. even asked me if I help help the box set for Black Sabbath, you know. And I went like, I love Ozzy, I love Black Sabbath, long live rock and roll, you know. Yeah. So there's no bad or anything, you know. It's just simply Ozzy was also protected by not having me, you know, because it would have been contradiction. It wouldn't have been in line. It would have been a silly thing.
Michael, our time is up. Thank you so much for taking your time, and good luck with the new album.
Thank you very much.
I remember when we were young, kids playing wild and free. Ain't no weeping, ain't no sorrows, all these passing years. So why the tears are falling so while crying bitterly? Wandering through a shadow land with no escape for me. The old tree, leafless in the forest.
Man må virkelig tage hatten af for Michael Schenker og hvad han har udrettet i sin karriere. Der er en grund til, at han bliver kaldt guitarlegende, bliver hyldet som en af de største inspirationskilder i heavy metal, og er blevet tilbudt en plads hos utallige af de største artister, vi har inden for genren. Og som han selv påstår, at blive kopieret igen og igen af sin egen bror igennem årtier. Om de nogensinde bliver gode venner igen, må tiden vise, men det er helt sikkert ikke sidste gang, vi kommer til at høre noget om den her affære. Det her var My Rock Podcast for denne gang. Tusind tak, fordi du lyttede med. Og husk, at du kan høre mange flere interviews på radioplay.dk/myrock.
My Rock. My Rock. Podcast.